Hi everyone, thanks for tuning in for my talk on the Cyclone DX software bill of materials. I'm going to try and get through a lot of content very quickly. So, a quick introduction. My name's Patrick Dwyer, member of the Cyclone DX Core Working Group, open source software maintainer. I'm the software development lead for a government organisation in Australia. If you want to reach out afterwards for any more information, feel free to find me on Twitter or even flick me an email. Now, some of you might not be familiar with the concept of a software bill of materials, so I'm going to start by talking about food allergies. We probably all know someone who's either got a food allergy or a food intolerance. And what's interesting about this is that these people, they've got to make risk-based decisions every time they purchase a new food product from the shops. And that's quite easy for them because we've got food labelling standards. As an example, food label from a Australian household brand name, Vegemite. It's a spread you put on your toast in the morning. It's a very polarizing product. You typically either love it or hate it. But there's some interesting components on the food label. One is made in Australia from at least 95% Australian ingredients. In this context, that's just about letting consumers make the choice of supporting local business and economy. But from through a security lens, we're talking about pedigree and provenance. And depending on what environment you're in, you're probably pretty concerned if you're running, say, critical network infrastructure, if some of your components are coming from specific foreign organisations that have got links to particular governments. It's also got a statement, malt extract from barley. Now, if we're talking about software dependencies, we've got a direct dependency there, which is the malt extract, but we've got a transitive dependency, which is barley. We've also got an allergen statement. And this is just about making it easy for consumers to make those risk-based decisions for themselves. For myself, my risk profile is non-existent. I don't have any allergies or intolerances. I don't even look at food labels. Some people have an intolerance, so they'll actively avoid particular ingredients. But maybe there's an ingredient that also happens to be in their favorite treat. And so they might have that occasionally, taking a risk-reward based approach to that decision. Then there's other people that have a very high risk profile. They're looking for things like may contain traces of peanuts. Again, through a security lens, you might be looking for may contain traces of struts. It's a really simple sort of explanation of what a software bill of materials is, but it's reasonably accurate. It's essentially a list of all the ingredients, all the third-party components that makes up software or a device. And gives transparency to what is inside the box. So, quick history on Cyclone DX originated in the OWASP community. It was originally designed in 2017, first official release in 2018. It's had a new release of the core specification every year since. First adopted by OWASP dependency track. There's a formal working group and standardization process. And members of the core working group are also OWASP leaders or members. Okay, a bit about the Cyclone DX approach. There are multiple formats out there, so it's important to understand our approach. One of the main things we really want to strive for is that it needs to be easy to adopt and also easy for the community to contribute to. Probably not surprising coming from the OWASP world that we've got a security focus, and we really want to identify risk for as many people as possible and as quickly as possible, and avoid anything that might prevent us from achieving that. We also strive for continuous improvement. We really want to innovate quickly and then improve over time, and we encourage that innovation and also competition through extensions. The extensions are an important feature of the Cyclone DX spec. So for the XML format, we support XML schema extensions. That lets us try out a new idea as an extension, iterate that separately to the core specification, and then when it reaches a suitable level of maturity, we can then incorporate it into the core specification. We produce immutable and backward compatible releases. In the core specification, we also take a facts first approach, and any dynamic facts or observations we support through extensions. Those extensions are really powerful because it also enables our community to create extensions for their, because some people might have unique use cases or requirements. and they can support that through an extension to the course specification. We also focus a lot on automation and optimization. This factors into design choices as well when we're further developing the specification, because it's important to have something that's not just easy to generate, but also something that's easy to consume and perform analysis on. So machine readability and automation is a very important design choice. It's also a full stack specification. For example, you might be shipping software in a container image. So you might have your assembled software application. It's going to have its direct dependencies and then transitive dependencies. Inside your container image, you might have a particular runtime version installed. You might want to describe what build tools were involved in the assembly of that software. And you probably also want to describe what's in that base image that you're shipping. What version of Linux it is, the components that are in that base image. Or maybe you're in the embedded device space, like a medical device manufacturer. You might want to describe the software that you're running on the device, its components, as well as the firmware that's on that device, and then getting down into the weeds, the components that make up that firmware. There's a lot of supported use cases. I won't go into any of them in detail. They're in detail on the website, along with examples in XML and JSON formats. But it's things like being able to describe a complete and accurate software component inventory, security vulnerability analysis, integrity verification. We're running something in production. Do all the files match what the supplier said they gave us? Software package evaluation, especially in the procurement stage, license identification and compliance, dependency relationships, pedigree and provenance, and even reliance on external services. Now, if you're doing a lot of software composition analysis already, you're probably thinking, well, we've got most of these covered already in some way or another. It's important to understand that a software bill of materials is not an analysis tool. It's a tool that enables more thorough analysis. And where it really shines is when you share this information. And that could be in different parties in a software supply chain scenario, especially, say, you're in the healthcare delivery organization and you're operating a medical device. And another Ripple 20 comes out, you'd want to know quickly if you're affected and where are you affected. Otherwise, you've got to wait for every party in that supply chain to communicate that information downstream, which can take a very long time. If you know what's already inside the box, you know about that when that public vulnerability is disclosed and published. It's even good for sharing information within an organization. You might have different teams working in different environments, different ecosystems, and using different tooling to build software. This lets them produce a software bill of materials using the native tooling available for their ecosystem. And then that information can be consumed by your application security team and analyzed in one consolidated format. Or you might be talking about vendor-supplied software. Once again, it's a single format for your security team to consume for all your vendor-supplied software. But it's even good for sharing this information between tools. Different tools have different use cases, have different users in mind, and have different strengths and weaknesses. So being able to share this raw information between different tooling allows you to then use the best tool for the job. Because a tool for your governance team who's looking at open source software license compliance risk is going to be a very different tool than what your developers want to use in their build and release pipeline. And there's quite a few tools already available. We've got them documented in the Tool Center. These are all the ones we know about that are free, open source, or proprietary tools, and different types of tools too. Things like that integrate with your build process. So this is for when you're building software. You can automatically generate SBOM with these tools for projects like Java, .NET, Node.js, PHP, Python, Ruby, Rust, Erlang, Golang, container images. Then there's different tooling for analysis. So think software composition analysis tooling. And some of these are from some application security vendors that you'd know of. There's vendors that specialize in particular areas like IoT or medical devices. There's also a CLI tool to make it easier to perform basic analysis on SBOMs, whether it's converting formats for different tools to consume it, or perhaps you want to do things like an SBOM diff. Maybe you're currently running version one of a software product, and then vendor gives you version two, and you want to see which components have been removed, added, or changed between those versions. And that tool's pretty good. The approach there is that it should be usable by a human, but it also for anything else, sorry, for any functionality, it should also support machine-readable output for those automation use cases, incorporating it into build and release pipelines, continuous analysis scenarios, that sort of thing. There is one third-party tool which I'd really like to call out, and that's OWASP Dependency Track. It is really, really good at SBOM consumption and continual analysis at scale. It looks for known vulnerabilities from multiple vulnerability sources. It tracks license information so you can configure license policies and report on violations of those policies, outdated components. It does a whole lot of analysis and also risk scoring. But perhaps what really sets it apart is that it's API first design. So every single bit of functionality available in the user interface is available via API, and more importantly, available for automation scenarios to help scale SBOM adoption and analysis at scale. If you don't want to go to your dev team, for example, and say, "Hey, we've got this new tool. We want you to log into it every day and check the dashboard for new vulnerabilities." You want to integrate to their existing tooling. So you want a webhook to fire off. Say, "Hey, there's a newly discovered vulnerability in one of the components you use. I'm going to raise an issue in your existing issue tracker." Or perhaps this is for vendor-supplied software. There's a newly discovered vulnerability in one of the components. I'm going to fire off an event into your SIEM for the security team to look at. It's really, really good at quickly scaling out SBOM consumption and analysis. Now, didn't have much time to get into a lot of stuff, so please, if you want to find out more information, go to the Cyclone DX website. You can check out the Cyclone DX organization on GitHub, the home of the core specification and the official tools. We've also got a Slack group, and we've also got a mailing list. Thanks for listening, and if you've got any questions, there'll be the Q&A session later. Thanks.